Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Scott Coyne and I will be your host for this episode, the second week in a row. And joining me to chew over the past week of action in the Pro League and the Challenger Pro League is our very own Joris Beck. How are you doing this week, Joris?
Good, all good. Let's see how that keeps going. I'm sorry for our listeners if you sometimes would hear some drilling noise because there is a neighbor of mine that seems to have some works to do at his apartment.
It's either that or you're recording this week from the dentist. Joris doesn't want to say which one's which.
Yeah, true. But I don't have that much of a feud with my dentist as many people do. So that would be the lesser harm for myself at the moment.
You heard it here first, folks. Joris is on good terms with his dentist. Let's dive in then, shall we? Dive into the action, not dental action, the football action. That's for a different podcast. We'll start with a wee score roundup, as we always do, in the Pro League. This past weekend, Westerlo played out a very exciting 6-goal thriller against St. Truiden. Antwerp smashed Standard Liège 6-0 at the Bossel in quite a game. Eupen lost 3-1 at home to Molenbeek. Mechelen won 1-0 against Charleroi. The big derby at the weekend, Club Bruges drew 0-0 with Cercle in a much more entertaining game than the score suggests. Joris's side, Genk, won 3-1, although it didn't look like they were going to at one stage. Gent and Anderlecht finished 1-1, and Union Saint-Gilloise managed to rack up their 8th consecutive league win by beating Kortrijk 3-0 at home. So why don't we start, Joris, as we always do, because we like to work through this in match order, with a Friday evening's game, Westerlo 3, St. Truiden 3, a 6-goal thriller, probably a fair result. St. Truiden thought they'd won it late on. Aboubakary Koita, with a rather marvellous free kick, looked like it had won the game. But yet again, St. Truiden doing what we emphasised last week, and that is failing to kill games off, Joris.
Indeed, they still are really struggling with that. Definitely an issue for them. But the most controversial part was, of course, that penalty that Sint-Truiden got. I would not give that as a penalty in a million years, I think, even with the rules that there are now. There was no intention, as there was no idea. It was one of those handball ones, of course. There was no intention to play the ball in the hand, as there was no idea where the ball was because he was engaging in it in a duel. So the defender, I'm forgetting the name here for a minute. Sorry for that, but. Yeah, just like, if we're going to give penalties like that, it's going to be, this is one of the biggest frustrations of everyone around the footballing world, I guess, at the moment. These handball penalties, according to the rules, you could still argue for it, but it's a really tough world to live in, I guess, as a defender on a pitch now. Nowadays, with these handball rules, but okay, you can give your opinion on that in a bit if you'd like, of course. But Sint-Truiden scoring 3, still not winning. That is a problem, because as we were talking about last week, I think they actually are one of the lowest scoring sides of the league. When you then score 3. Yeah, you would expect them to take the 3 points as well, but sadly that did not happen, and somehow they're now overperforming their XG as well because of that. Also, over-reliance still on Koita, of course, as he's in the form as he is at the moment, that is not an issue. In the longer run, it could become one, but Koita now the second player to reach 10 goals this season as well, after Dinke. And also broke with scoring that first one already. That was the penalty. He also broke his own goal scoring record for the season, his personal record for the season. So congratulations to him, I guess, also on that first cap for Mauritania. So that's all good news for Koita, except that they did not get any of the of those points. I also wanted to mention, and now maybe it's a good time as well, like this scoreline of 3-3 is not a regular one for any side in the league, I guess. But, well, also it's a scoreline that both sides had against Genk in a few weeks, well, around a month ago, both in more, well, not completely consecutive weeks, but in short succession anyway. In that game against Genk, Coita also scored 3 and he didn't get them the 3 points here. So that already means that half of his goals have not led to Sint-Truiden win the game. That is an additional worry on top of all the other worries that they still might have, despite playing quite well. Albeit, I would argue that Westerlo probably deserved more in this game. If one team needed to win, a draw might be a fair result. But if there would be one team to win, I think Westerlo had quite a few good chances. Also got that decision against them quite late on in the game as well. Ultimately, they will be relatively happy that they still got a point out of it, since even later in the game, indeed, the more goals followed for both Sint-Truiden and Coita. But yeah, Westerlo in general, slowly still getting some points. That's a good sign. Not many teams around them have gotten points, so that's another encouraging sign. And now they're really, like I said last week, yeah, hanging on and keeping close to getting close to a few of the other sides. Well, a few of the other sides can even concise more or less of half of the league at the moment still. That's how tight things are between 5 or 6 teams, I think, at least at the bottom. Where I would also argue that Madsen being back on the pitch, of course, he also scored a goal, but it does feel like it does give them to add something to their game, to give them something extra. Like, he had a falling out with the Rook earlier in the season where he didn't feature that much. Not that many points were gathered. He came back in the team. And well, before that happened already, the points, they had won a game and they had grabbed some points. But I feel like the general level of play more up front in the pitch is improving a bit there as well. Well, you can see that with the 3 goals, of course, as well. Defensively, outside of this game, they had restructured it a bit. Jeruk had restructured it a bit. And it was standing quite well for the last few games. And now they need to find the balance there, I guess, a little bit again. They could have won this game. They didn't. But all in all, yeah, like you said, probably a fair result.
Yeah, plenty of frustration for Westerlo this week. I noticed Jonas De Rock had quite a lot to say about the referee after this game, you know, going as far as to say that he thought that he had far too much of an influence on the outcome of the game. Obviously talking about the penalty in particular. And I think Jonas's point really was the one that lots of coaches make, and sometimes we do ourselves here, in that, you know, what are you supposed to do? You know, it's strange. The laws of the game now are, if it touches the arm, then, you know, in theory, it's a penalty. That forward action and intent seems to have been removed from the laws of the game, which is really frustrating, I think, for fans and for coaches. And I think that's the point he was trying to make this week. But yeah, I think some signs definitely that Westerlo are starting to pick up a little bit. Certainly offensively and starting to show a little bit more. They will be frustrated not to have maybe got more out of the game, but considering it looked like they'd lost it at the death to rescue a point, I think, you know, maybe not bad when all said and done. Sint-Truiden, as we were saying, you know, failing to kill games. Just this game and last week, obviously, with them drawing against Eupen, that's them dropped 4 points over the last couple of games from winning positions over the last couple of weeks. And if they'd managed to win these 2 games, then I think they would have squeaked into playoff 1 by now. So their inability to kind of kill games is really costing them. Having said that, I think they are, you know, they're punching above their weight, as we know and have been since the start of the season. You mentioning Coita obviously getting his call up by Mauritania is quite significant, I think, because he's the one player who is producing reasonably consistently for them. And this is a player that I think they weren't expecting to lose to the African Cup of Nations in January, but it looks like they're now going to. So that one striker that they absolutely had to try and find in the January window looks like it may well now be 2. So It's interesting how, you know, circumstances can work both for and against you. That'll be really frustrating for the recruitment team at St Truiden, and they'll have to look really hard as to what they're going to do about that, because they can't be without a player like that for too long at the moment. But yeah, 6-6 goal thriller and a good start to the weekend if you were looking for some entertainment, that's for sure. Let's move on to the port of Antwerp, shall we, where Antwerp absolutely melted Standard Liège. I'm going to use the word melt a lot this evening, I think, because this was one of those games where it finished 6 but could have been quite a lot more. And I suppose my first question to you, Joris, really is, how bad were Standard Liège this weekend?
I have not watched this game in life, so unfortunately I cannot completely judge from that. But, well, I saw the highlights and that's enough, I guess. The answer is quite... I don't know the right words to say it even. Like, it was really, really bad. Doesn't even really begin to tell the story here. Yeah, definitely. And also, they have such a terrible track record at the Bozal now as well. In their last 3 visits, I think there was also a cup result in there, but nonetheless, they lost 14-1 in this game. Of course, the bulk of those goals came from these 6, but that still means there were already 8 in the last 2 visits as well. I think twice 4, if I'm not mistaken. I feel a little bit for Hankine, who was replacing Bodar in goal, because Bodar was feeling ill and still is feeling ill a bit, I believe. He also was late at the Red Devils camp now. Yeah, talking about that, Liège, Red Devils. Well, Van Heusden now ultimately is out. Well, I hope for him that the injury is not too bad, because he had his fair share there already. But, well, in this game, definitely he did not prove that he was worth the Red Devil level. Can't really single him out, maybe. But on the other hand, well, if it's really about the future of the national team, it's still, you maybe should. Yeah, it was not that he could help. Was a lone soldier holding the ship, trying to hold the ship or the fort. He definitely did undergo the same treatment as the rest of his teammates. How bad they were, some numbers can say it, I guess, as well. 0 shots on target, never a good sign. That comes together with 0.08 expected goals as well. So that also means that there were also not that many shots in general, and that they were not very dangerous either. It was Standard's biggest loss since August, either way, in 2015, a 7-1 against Club Brugge. Yeah, that are shocking numbers. The last one a bit less. I thought it would be way longer ago still, but nonetheless, definitely not a great result here. Hoefkes also, like you also have reported already, said that he couldn't say what he said on to his players on TV, because I don't think it was meant for children's ears. We can go on and on about how bad Standard were. Of course, that does play a role, I guess we should also talk about that other side in red and white. That won 6-0. That's the second 6-0 they have this season as well. It's also something that you don't have that often, especially since, like, in between those 2 games, there was a spell where they couldn't find the net for love nor money. So interesting how Antwerp's season is going still, I suppose. It does feel like the ketchup bottle, to use that cliche again, has opened for Jansen after scoring his first in 10 games last week. He scored a brace in this game, the first 2 goals as well. And he scored a penalty as well. In that spell where they couldn't score a goal, there were also a few penalty misses. One or no, even 2 of them, I believe, from him. Biggest win for them against Standard in history as well. So that for them, it was the biggest one, the win for Standard. It was not the biggest loss yet, but definitely among the worst pages in their history in a single game, of course. So maybe not a page, but like a sentence of all the goods that came out of Standard in after these two games against Club Brugge and Anderlecht. Well, that has evaporated quickly again as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because it was something that kind of Carl Ofkins brought up this week when he was talking a little bit about the aftermath of the game, and obviously he was frustrated that not only had they been melted, I'm going to use it again, but that they'd been unable to kind of, you know, build any momentum off the back of those two fantastic victories. And I think he also wanted to point out that although he'd been talking up the positive side of the mentality of his squad, and how, you know, he was saying just sort of 10 days or so ago that he felt that the kind of mental strength of this squad was the best he'd ever seen in any squad that he'd worked with. So he was flattering his side a little bit there. But then to come off the back of two really big victories against, you know, Anderlecht and Club, which nobody really expected them to do at that time, you know, it suggested that maybe they were turning some kind of a corner. And I think there was a feeling, and he did call the side out when he said, look, you know, you can't go and get results like those two and then have results like this, because, you know, that inconsistency just, you know, is suggestive of a side who's mentally aren't really in the right place, almost as if to say, well, you know, if you can beat those two big boys, then, you know, we're one of the big boys again, we're back. And it's that search for consistency that seems to elude them. When they think they're making progress, they take a few steps backwards, and they made it difficult for themselves, obviously, this weekend, didn't they? You know, as you were saying, two goals down inside 14 minutes, and recently they've conceded some goals early in games, which have given them an uphill challenge. And they need just to find that consistency and not slacking off when they get a really good result against a side that they're not expected to. And that seems to be something that's kind of plagued them for, well, certainly what feels like a couple of seasons now. They seem to have historically been doing reasonably well against sides that they want to challenge, but dropping points against sides that they kind of shouldn't. And Carl Ofkins is finding that issue that Ronnie Dyla had psychologically seems to very much still be there. I mean, I saw all of this game and they were bad. I mean, I don't want to rub any more salt into Standard fans' wounds here, but they were angry, very angry after this game, kind of rightly so, and some of them really turning against Ofkins and saying, you know, well, you know, how long can we put up with performances like this? And it must be very difficult to be a Standard fan at the moment. I mean, it feels like we've been saying this for ages, but they feel like they're making progress, and then something like this comes along and hits them in the face, and that's kind of difficult to take, because you just don't know where you are. Speaking of where they are, I mean, looking at their schedule coming up, Joris, it's a bit brutal to say the least, which in some ways might be good, because they've proved they can beat the big boys. But coming up over the next few weeks, just in the lead up to Christmas, they've got Genk at home, then they go to the Jan Breidel to play Club, and then they have the back-to-back games against Anderlecht, both away fixtures within the same week. So they go to Brussels in the Cup, and then a few days later on the Sunday, they go back to Brussels in the league. So they've got some really big games coming up, and they will hope that they'll be able to get this weekend out of their system really quickly.
Yeah, they won't have any other option anyway. So yeah, that was clear that this was a playoff one that they're playing in the next weeks. And after that, they have to see where they are standing, and then hopefully get some points. Well, like you said, actually, maybe this might be the series where they do get the points, then maybe don't drop off after that, whether they got the results they wanted after this embarrassing one or not. Of course, maybe it's better to lose once 6-0, as like, or not to throw in another cliche, than 6 times 1-0. But we can't see that at the moment. Of course, we can't really know what's going to happen in the next weeks, but definitely a tough schedule.
Yeah, well, we'll see how they do, because a result like that certainly kind of test your mettle, and you know, he's going to really see, you know, what he's working with then. You know, the flattery's not going to do much good, I think, you know, in the aftermath of that. So that the real gauntlet thrown down to that squad. Let's move on, shall we? Let's go to the Far East, in this case, the Far East of Belgium. To Eupen Malmedy, down to the East Cantons. Eupen were playing at home this weekend, Joris. They lost 3-1 to Molenbeek in a generally even and, you know, not that exciting a game, to be honest. I saw this game and had a feeling going into it that it wasn't going to be a particularly exciting game. Sure enough, it wasn't. Molenbeek actually winning this simply by kind of creating more, and obviously by virtue of the fact that they were playing against the worst defence in the league, there was a sense that perhaps Molenbeek were going to eventually be able to wear down Eupen, which is what happened. Isaac Nuhu managing to give Eupen the lead early on in this game, and Molenbeek turning it around. Nuhu will be glad to score this weekend, because he missed two very good chances before his goal as well. So although being in decent form, he's missing a lot of opportunities for a player who, much like Aboubakary Keïta at St Truiden, as you were saying, Joris, is Nuhu's somebody that Eupen are certainly over-reliant on at the moment. I thought Xavi Messi had a very good game this weekend. I thought he was creating a lot, providing a lot, some really good line-breaking passes, something we know he's very good at. Hasn't featured too much recently for kind of tactical reasons, but started this game and had a really strong game, as did Makhdar Gueye. I thought he was good this weekend. He had a really decent game, assisting for one of the goals, and he's been looking reasonably consistent since he joined Molenbeek, actually. He was always... yeah, peaks and troughs when he was at Oostend. You know, he'd be great some weeks and then fall off a radar for a bit. But he's been reasonably good since going to the Brussels side. And big win for them, really, in a way, because looking at Molenbeek's schedule, they've got some tough games coming up. They've got Anderlecht away, Charleroi at home, and Ghent away in the next two or three weeks in the lead up to Christmas. So continuing to rack up points is really important for them, and they will have identified this game ahead of this weekend as one where they thought that there was definitely 3 points in it for them.
And it was their first win in 8 games. That might be more important, yeah, even as well than anything that's coming. But although Kasapa, the trainer, was not very aware of how long ago it was, actually, so he doesn't seem to mind too much at the moment yet. Maybe he shouldn't either, as long as they are... Well, they never have been in the relegation troubles yet this season. That still might come, of course, but so far they've managed to escape them a little bit in this game as well. Like you said, Nuhu, both the problem and the savior for Eupen. I've mentioned that before already as well. I think it is a problem that they rely so much on him because he's just not efficient enough. He did miss 2 or maybe even 3 big chances, should have scored at least twice, maybe even already a hat-trick before or when he scored his first goal. Yeah, so definitely that definitely something to work on for them, for him and for them. They actually were playing Molenbeek off the park from what I saw in the first half an hour, but yeah, because of the inefficiency, they only were 1 goal ahead, and then somehow it got overturned really quickly. And yeah, very fragile as well, of course, after conceding that first goal. That's sums up Eupen's problems as well. Both of them are not very new, but let's see if Nuhu can keep them in the league nonetheless, or maybe if they can bring in some new players in the new window as well, of course, or some other player steps up and pitch in a bit more. Like I said, Molenbeek's first win in 8 league games, scoring at the first occasions, first occasion. So yeah, I'm glad. I'm sure the fans will have loved that. The fans that got in there for free and got their beer for free as well as an action for the club. So yeah, they will have enjoyed their afternoon there.
Yep.
Well, evening or afternoon.
Yeah. It's always nice to make a long trip, reasonably long trip, that for the Molenbeek fans to have it worth their while. It's nice to see clubs looking after their fans like that. That's for sure. And they definitely had a good weekend. I mean, obviously not only winning the game, but their fans were actually in very fine voice during the fixture this weekend. Nice little fan tifo display that they brought with them as well, that they were making plenty of noise with. So for those who watch their Belgian football regularly, you'll know that the away end of the Keurbeg's actually kind of quite small and tucked in the corner, and it was absolutely rammed with away supporters. So they brought a healthy bunch of away fans down for an ultimately successful away day. Speaking of away days, let's move to Mechelen, shall we? Mechelen beating Charleroi 1-0 at home this past weekend. Not a great away day for Charleroi. Really poor performance for them. We'll get to them in a second, but we know that Mechelen were being watched in the stands by their now new T1, who we know is Besnik Hase, who has returned to the Pro League, Joris. Regular watchers of Belgian football will know Besnik well. Had two playing spells at Joris' side, Genk, a successful spell as a player at Anderlecht, and then shorter spells later on in his career with Lokeren and Cercle Bruges, amongst other clubs. But yeah, certainly somebody who knows Belgian football very well, both as a player and as a coach. Of course, coaching Anderlecht, Legia Warsaw, Olympiakos, spending time in Saudi Arabia most recently as well before kind of coming back to Belgium. But he's also won some stuff, hasn't he, Joris? You know, he won the league with Genk in 99. He's won the Belgian Cup as well, won three league titles with Anderlecht as a player in the Super Cup, and then winning the league title with Anderlecht as T1 in 2014 and the Super Cup. So, you know, he's won honours in Belgium, and he's no stranger to Belgium. Interestingly, his contract is only till the end of the season, which suggests to me that the club are obviously keeping their options open and thinking very much short term of this, and will assess where they are then. He's spoken to some of the players already. His first game in charge will be after the international break, so he's got a couple of weeks now to work with those players who aren't away in international duty in the training ground. And his first game is actually quite a significant one, because they're away to Kortrijk. So in terms of points, this is a big one. If he can get a win there, it changes the complexion. But Frederik van der Beest, obviously, who's been in charge for the last couple of games and will be staying on board as part of the coaching staff, obviously has picked up 4 out of a possible 6 points since the departure of Stephen Defoe, and has managed to get Malinois out of the drop zone this weekend. So he's given him the best possible present for taking over. But, you know, tell me your thoughts on this appointment, Joris, because I was slightly concerned by how quickly this was all done. I wasn't sure this was an entirely positive sign.
I would say it's one of the worst decisions they could have made. As a player, he was great, of course, as well. Definitely no remarks on that. But as a coach, I guess you could also ask, for example, Legia Warsaw and Olympiakos fans, two clubs that are really well-known clubs in their home countries, and that almost every season win the title, at least in the case of Olympiakos the last years. Liga Warsaw, I haven't had an eye on. I think Ben might know a bit more about how they are faring now. I believe there have been some changes in Polish football, some more variations in the champions, if I'm not mistaken, anyway. But regardless of that, they had both had really, really terrible spells under him. Mm. And that says a few things. Also, he was not active as a manager for a while now. With Anderlecht, yes, he became champion, but he really also had the most talented squad. So it would have been a crime if he wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Maybe as well. Although I do think there he did a few things right, but yeah, no, that more after taking over. I'm not sure if that was in that season that they became champions either. I think that might have been the season before that, where we succeeded John van den Brom, another former Genk and Anderlecht manager. Related person at least, that is active in Poland now as well, if I'm not mistaken.
So yeah,
make that full circle. regardless of that, yeah. So not a big fan of the man as a manager, at least. Also, I wouldn't get many hope out of his first press conferences either, where he was also talking about the fans, of course. Well, that's always a good thing to mention once, but it kept going on a bit like that and less about the tactics. And that's what you rather like to see, I guess, how he would approach the game, that they give some insight in that. And he hasn't really given that. Maybe I'll cut him some slack. Maybe he still needs some time to assess the whole group and its duration at the moment. And now in the next 2 weeks, he has a bit of time for that, but still not very hopeful signs. So about the appointment, I'm as skeptical as I could be, I guess. I think I even mentioned it to you right after you mentioned that he would be the new manager, like in our I mentioned it like, yeah, well, good luck promoting next year. I'm not sure, of course, that will be the case. It's not only entirely up to him, of course. And then the win this weekend does give some breathing space and a good environment to start in, I guess, as well. But yes, that first game against Kortrijk, then that could already be a really vital one to see. If Mechelen win that one, they will be safe for quite some time in the season. Mm. Well, then regardless of what they will do next, that will give them definitely something to build on. But on the other hand, if they would lose that game, the win from last weekend already has not had much effects. We'll have to see.
I completely agree with you, actually. I think it's a slightly strange appointment. It was certainly one that I was surprised by. We know that the club also spoke to Bernd Hollerbach, who did very well at St. Truiden. And in a way, that kind of makes sense, because they've been struggling generally in lots of areas, Mechelen. So I think they were looking for some solidity, obviously, and a degree of stability. So I can understand why they spoke to Bernd. And the other name who was in the mix quite prominently briefly was Timmy Simons, who obviously used to be at Zulte Waregem, is now at Dender. There was some consideration given to him as well, a couple of other names in the frame, but Hase and Hollerbach and Simons were the only three that seemed to be kind of at the forefront of the board's mind. And the thing that made me certainly sceptical and a bit concerned about it was how quickly they elected to go with Besnik Hase as their first choice, when he wasn't necessarily, you know, the obvious kind of standout candidate. So you just wonder what that decision was actually based on. But we do know it's only till the end of the season, so they have gone down the road of ultimately making a kind of short-term decision. If things go better than expected, then obviously I would imagine he will be there again next season. But at the moment, they're focusing on staying in the division. And last week we said, well, what are they going to pick to do strategically here? Are they going to go short-term, which seems to be what they've decided to do, or think slightly longer term, which is what they haven't done in this case? And it's going to be interesting, I think, because he certainly has, you know, a reasonable amount of experience, and he knows Belgian football pretty well. You know, we were saying last week that they were likely to go down that road as a choice, but it's a slightly strange choice, and I think a lot of people feel that way, and we'll see what happens. In terms of the game this weekend, I thought Mechelen dominated the game without creating too much, which is the worrying thing still. It's all very well dominating games, but it's all about, you know, what chances you create, and they didn't create that many, starting with Norman Basset up front, who I'm going to be slightly critical of here for a minute. Although he generally had a good game, I did think he was trying to win penalties off the back of the referee in a way that you don't like to see. He had a moment in the first half where he went down very, very easily and didn't get the penalty. And to be honest, I thought he should have got booked for that. I'm going to be really honest. I felt that was a dive. And ironically, the penalty, which is the one that won the game, was one of those ones where it probably was, but there wasn't a great deal in it. It was, you know, a meeting of limbs. So I kind of felt sorry for Damian Mark there a little bit. But yeah, they get the penalty, which decided the game. Jeffrey Ehremans scoring it. He had quite a good game, actually, Ehremans. Charleroi, on the other hand, just to come round to them, they just didn't really deserve anything this weekend. They were really poor. And what I wanted to ask you about, Joris, was how much pressure do you think Felix Mazu's in now? Because, you know, they're in the drop zone and they've got some tricky games coming up. They're obviously playing Standard and they've got Union alongside Westerlo and Molenbeek, which are probably winnable games for them potentially, but they're just this inconsistencies plaguing them, isn't it?
They will have to win those games, of course. If they don't, then Mazu's days probably are over, regardless of his legacy in Charleroi. Because, yeah, okay, by losing against those sides, they actually also would jump. There are a few of them are sides that are, yeah, now at the moment still be underneath them, but they would jump over them in a heartbeat. Yeah. Yeah, definitely a worrying times for Charleroi, and definitely they seem to be really in a slump. Only 1 point away from home still, like sadly against Genk. I think I mentioned that too much. I give that game too much mentions, maybe as well. But yeah, definitely. But that also means still no win away from home. Where we're around at the halfway point of the season, of the regular season. So that's not really. I also only wrote down outside of that fact that they were piss poor. So, well, I guess that's a way to sum them up. Not to say that Mechelen were that great either, but I do feel like they did deserve that win.
Yeah.
But said getting that first start as well, I felt like he brought some energy. Didn't play that well, maybe, but he brought some energy and something to Mechelen's game at least. For them, it was also their first win in a lot of games now of the 8, I believe. Because of that, it's not really a surprise that it actually was a penalty that got them over the line. That it's a penalty that Herreman's shot maybe was a little bit, because he had missed 3 out of his last 5 before.
Yeah.
This one's now 3 out of his last 6. That definitely he scored this one, and it was a vital one and a crucial win for Mechelen. And like we said, we'll have to see if they can build on that or if they get dragged in sooner than you would want, in your case at least. And for Mechelen fans in general, as a Mechelen fan, you would not want them to be dragged down. But we'll see. In Charleroi, they really should be starting to pick up some points. Mazu definitely should be under a lot of pressure now.
I think he absolutely is. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with them over the next few weeks, because it didn't feel like too long ago we felt like they'd slightly turned a corner, but it looks like they've come up against a bit of a brick wall again.
Very similar against their rivals, actually, in Standard. Now that I think of it, there's some. They also had 1-2 games in a row against Antwerp and another one at home, in 2 consecutive weeks, and now, it seems to have been gone again so quickly again.
Yeah, strange how things work, isn't it? It really is. But we'll see how they get on in the coming weeks to see if they can turn the corner that we thought they maybe had. Certainly the pressure on Felix and his squad there. Let's move on, shall we, to the big derby of the weekend, the big Bruges derby, which finished goalless, which is interesting. And I'll tell you why it's interesting, because it's not often that people say a 0-0 draw in any game is interesting. I think it's interesting because this is the first goalless draw, Joris, since 1936 in the Bruges derby. So that's quite something. But ultimately, it means that Cercle stay above club in the table. Good game, this. Both sides really trying to win it, I felt. So don't let the scoreless result give any indication as to the kind of quality of the game, because both sides played reasonably well, I felt, and positively. Big shout out to Varlason, who obviously was absolutely outstanding this weekend, possibly player of the entire weekend, yeah, arguably made the difference in this game. Made a number of saves, six or seven really, really decent saves in this game. As good a performance as I've ever seen him put in for Serkal Joris. And big Miro Muzlic will be delighted with this, because obviously going into this game, as we were talking last week, psychologically it was really interesting. Serkal going into, as I was saying, above club in the table, staying there after this result. And, you know, I think this is kind of an important thing psychologically, kind of going into the coming weeks. And despite kind of club throwing almost everything at it, Ronnie Dyla coming away slightly frustrated, and a sense maybe a little bit that some of the club fans are, you know, just kind of being more critical than they had been of Ronnie Dyla up till recently. He's been a bit prickly at some of his recent press conferences, not enjoying some of the questions about, you know, them dominating games but not being able to get things over the line. And what we saw this weekend were one side who perhaps are technically better than the other one, and the other side who physically are better than the other one, kind of cancelling each other out. But Varleston certainly making sure that Serkal got their point this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good performance by him. I even put out a tweet. I don't do that that often, but appreciation tweet for him, because he's having a quite good season. Yeah. I've always been quite critical about him. That's also why I felt like, okay, maybe I should do that. I'm not saying he won me over, but he definitely is in a good form recently in this game. Also, yeah, made that even more clear. He could showcase his talent. Of course, I also feel like already it's after that, it's already been a bit over hyped maybe as well, how good he was. But nonetheless, he did definitely do what he needed to do. And well, a few of those balls were definitely not easy ones to catch. That definitely a good performance for him. Nonetheless, I'll try to dampen the mood a little bit more for Sekle. They're struggling to get points of the top teams. I can even say more. Okay, they have won against Gent, so that's the good news, but they haven't scored against Antwerp, Union, Anderlecht, Genk, and Club Brugge now as well. So there is definitely something in them that seems to be their limit at the moment. Who knows? Maybe they can add that to their game still. That definitely something to work on. Although, of course, it is logical that these are the more difficult games, of course. But really, scoring no goals, that's the bad stat. nothing else. It's at the moment. But yeah, it should not get to their heads. But they did get their sixth clean sheet, so that's good. Also remarkably, so almost halfway the season, regular season, they did get finally their first draw. So the final zero in all the rankings in the Belgian Pro League has disappeared finally. So about Dyla and being a bit more, getting more critique now lately and being a bit more prickly about it. It does make sense, I guess. Like I said, it's almost halfway the season and regular season. And at the moment, they're currently not making the playoff, the Champions playoffs, which is extended in comparison to last season. And so that's not a good sign, of course. Not that anything is dramatic. They're not miles behind many teams. Okay, Union is definitely running away a little bit, but apart from that, the distances are very much overseeable. And even we all know that anything at this point of the season doesn't need to mean that much yet, as long as you keep in the peloton. It's really time to really get a streak going. Their performance arguably was one of their best ones in recent weeks, nonetheless, though. So that's also worth to mention. And that with Ordóñez, who got his first start as well. Mm. And they created to be the hero for Club Brugge. That also means Club Brugge created quite a lot. And they did, and they probably should have put a weight regardless of Varleston's performance. I feel like Jutta had one that he that I was surprised that he just did the one thing he shouldn't be doing after seeing that goal against Antwerp, that you know he can beat them. He can be subtle, where he went for the hard shot just straight. I think it was not even at Wagnerson in this case, but against Miyange, but with a bit more composure, that would have been an easier one to put away. Skov Olsen missed a few big chances as well. Also got off injured, but okay, the news is that it's not too bad, and that he even still went to Denmark for the national team, squad. So like, I guess that there's no real injury worry longer term. But and one thing that is remarkable on the other side for Cluj as well is that it was their first clean sheet in the league since the 13th of August. So yeah, that I guess that's a positive in a way as well, of course. But unfortunately for them, it was also one of those still very rare games where they do not put at least one goal away, and they only got away with a draw here.
Yeah, it was a really good game, this, actually, and a really good advert for the Bruges derby itself. You know, just looking at the reactions of the players on the pitch and the coaches on the sidelines, if you were in any doubt that this fixture matters, because I know there's this theory that the Bruges derby doesn't have as much spice as some others. You know, just watching the reactions of everybody involved this weekend, you know, proved that is not the case. And obviously it had the added interest of, you know, Cercle coming into this game above club in the table, which is obviously still the case. And it's been, you know, a long, long time since that last happened as well. So, you know, it just underlines the good work that we know is going on there. And some of the issues that club kind of face at the moment, as you were alluding to there. Let's move on, shall we, to your side, Joris. Genk winning 3-1 in the end against Oscar Garcia's Leuven side, his first game in charge. Genk, certainly the deserved winners, leaving it late to get it over the line. And it looked as if at one point that wasn't what was going to happen, Joris.
No, it was a summary of Genk season, typically, in this season. That's where I was very, very, very frustrated, because I also felt coming, despite Leuven did not create anything before they got that first chance in the 85th minute. And of course, Genk was only leading 1-0 by then. So that was an equalizer, which could cost them. But luckily, I was proven wrong, and the players were less defeatist as I was. So they still went for it, and they got it over the line ultimately. But I was saying that goal buried Genk's season. That was not in the sense of anything horrible, but more seasons buried. I didn't finish that sentence there. Buried Genk's season hopes for. Not, I'm not even talking about the title. I still feel like this might be out of reach either way with the current squad or the current forms of in the, everything going on, current context. But that also just for the higher positions and maybe a top three. I've just felt it's, again, it's not the first time this season, but it felt like now this would be the time too many where I really would have lost hope for that. Not saying it's still going to happen and so on, but it's good that they pulled it over the line, maybe even better than if it would have stayed 1-0 in the end, I suppose, in building team spirit and so on. But nonetheless, got away with a scare there. But yeah, definitely not very happy with the way Leuven played, not necessarily on the physical front. That's nothing wrong there, but just like very. If I hope that Oscar Garcia will implement some more attacking intentions in his side, because they really just came to defend that point. Even if when Genk scored, they didn't really do anything until you always get that one moment and they took it. So another reason why I'm quite happy that they did not get away with that. That it was not a nice watch. I would say for anyone, I guess. Also not for the Leuven fans. Of course, they would have taken that point, and that's they would be really happy with that. That's their right, of course. Nothing against that, but it was not entertaining, to say the least. just also like last season, losing that 1 point that they had at the moment, the draw in the final minutes. Giving it away. Yeah, luckily in this case, also Genk. They should have killed. If you see how they finally scored, managed to score and create a bit more in the final minutes, you keep wondering why they didn't push through and put a two or three away before halftime and put the game to bed, more or less at least for at that time. But okay. I'm sure there's nothing deliberate in that, but it looked like they were taking it a little bit too easy, and it was going a bit too easy, maybe just because Leuven was not really giving them a fight, but they failed to be efficient and to kill the game. Definitely an efficiency issue. Also, no surprise that actually that first goal, that was already from the start. They were dominating, but not creating that much. Or when creating, just missing the target. It's also no surprise that it wasn't ultimately, a stupidly given away penalty kick that gave them that first lead. And also that penalty even didn't go in the first time. Also, like what I said for Hermans, Heine also has a similar record for his last penalties, I believe, around 3. Out of his last 6 scored or something like that. Considering this one a miss, of course, even though he luckily scored at a rebound.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because you obviously saw all of this game at the same time. I had my eagle eye on Beveren against Lommel at the same time, which was ongoing in the Challenger Pro League. Obviously, it was Oscar Garcia's kind of first game in charge. Let me ask you about Leuven defensively, because obviously that's been one issue that's just been plaguing them all season. Second joint worst defence. Did you see anything at all this weekend that suggested that maybe they were starting to address some of those concerns?
Let me put it this way. Genk scored 3 but still underperformed their expected goals. Mm. So I guess that's okay, of course, a penalty is always a bit of a disrupting factor in that. But nonetheless, they got 18 shots and 6 on targets. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the numbers you'd like. 6 on target doesn't need to be that bad. I would not really say so. It was more really Genk failing to really push through or putting the ball in the nets at times. So they were more the organization was better, so there was more people in the way, but nonetheless, at times it went way too easy. I would still say. Final thing about this game, of course, it's also not it's something that has been highlighted a lot in the media now. But yeah, Munoz scoring almost every game now, which is quite a feat for a right back. Fourth league game in a row, if I'm not mistaken. And he also scored last week a vital goal in Hungary, in Europe. So that's, definitely, he's on a goal scoring streak. If no one else does it, he'll have to do it, I guess.
Yeah, I think going to the Sagaica and keeping a clean sheet, let alone getting anything out of this game, is always going to be a big ask for Leuven. Genk's schedule coming up is quite tough, isn't it, Joris? Obviously, Standard away next, then Fiorentina away, then Ghent at home in the league before Oostend away in the cup. So quite a difficult schedule coming up in the run-up to Christmas for your team.
Yep, but that's going on with a lot of teams now. Definitely. It's quite a difficult one, but that's why it's another good reason to win this game, at least, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's move on to the other really big game this weekend in terms of kind of playoff one significance. That was the Galamco in Ghent. Ghent playing Anderlecht at finishing one each. Again, I thought a draw, probably a fair result. Ghent, marginally the better side, couldn't quite make their domination in terms of possession count, although Anderlecht arguably had the better of the chances, which is no surprise. With the kind of creative players that they've got. I don't think either manager will ultimately be too unhappy with a point in this game, Joris, because it keeps them both in touch without losing any real ground. Kasper Dolberg, interestingly, becoming the first player to score in seven consecutive league games for Anderlecht. The last player to do so was, do you know who it was, Joris? I'll be cruel and ask you that.
Nope.
Yeah, that's just me being cruel, everybody. Yeah, the last Anderlecht player to score seven consecutive games in the league was Mark de Grijse back in 89-90. I'd pulled that one out. Yeah, so that's an interesting stat, and he's really kind of developed a real head of steam over the last kind of couple of months now. Kasper Dolberg, he's becoming very important to them. Yeah, as I was saying, I don't think either coach will be too unhappy with that ultimately. And speaking of either coach, I don't know if anybody saw too much of the post-match press conference, but there was some rather humorous, gentle sniping at each other, trading a bit of tit for tat with some comments about the game, which was kind of quite amusing. Some of which I think is motivated, I think, anyway, by the fact that Big Ein van Eisenbroek obviously is an ex-Anderlecht head coach. And actually has a very good record against Anderlecht with the other sides that he's managed as well. So I think that little bit of prickliness coming out in the post-match press conference there. But what did you make of this big game, Joris?
He's also still the last Anderlecht coach that has won against Gent. To throw in the mix there. So that's already to jump on that. Like 5 years without a win for Anderlecht against Gent now. Last win in Gent specifically, so away. Even longer ago, even in 2016. So definitely not their favorite opponent there, considering also the cup final 2 seasons ago that they lost on penalty kicks against them. There's a lot of rust in that series, if I'm not mistaken, either. I did not look that up, but that this time that was the case. What I did note down is actually the opposite of what you were saying. Although probably both coaches would agree, but I would say, like, ultimately, of course, I could not know that at the time yet, but Union and to a lesser extent Antwerp and Genk are the winners of this game because these teams in second and third position dropped points for the teams in front of them and right behind them. Got a bit closer or ran away a bit further. I felt like Tisodadi was overthinking a little bit on a few occasions. We gave him some praise last week, but in this game, he was overthinking a few things. Differently. Also, there was this small thing with the armband as well in support of Palestinian armband. That's another topic of discussion. It's interesting in this case, I think, because he was wearing it for multiple reasons. Like one, they only noticed after half an hour or so, and then he needed to take it off. I could get that you kick it off in the beginning, that you get asked for that, or though, since you didn't see it, like quietly do that at the break, since it was close to the break already anyway. That's one part, and of course there's other sides that of course he does have an Israeli teammate in Gandelman as well, so I'm not sure how these two get along in the dressing room at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. I did take note of that incident, and obviously Ismail Kandus obviously falling foul as far as the referee's concerned of the same thing. They both had Palestinian armbands. It's interesting you bring this up, actually, because it's something we've seen across European football more generally, you know, particularly in relation to kind of fans expressing their views on this. We hadn't seen anything kind of quite so explicit that much on the pitch. It's interesting that I think the mainstream media obviously tried to kind of highlight the fact that, you know, players who have Palestinian sympathies or backgrounds culturally, you know, if they have an Israeli teammate, then somehow there's a kind of a potential issue there where there always isn't. Otherwise, I suspect they wouldn't have done it in the first place. It was interesting to see that the referee only spotted that kind of quite late into the game before, you know, requesting that both players remove them. It was interesting, Tisa Daly this week, he was actually asked about that, and he did highlight the fact that it's okay for players to display kind of pro-Ukrainian sympathies but not pro-Palestinian ones, which I thought was a fair point to make, which nobody seemed to kind of address. But obviously that's for another place in time, that discussion. But it's certainly something we're going to see, I think, more of as long as the geopolitical situation is as it is. As well, which is kind of unfortunate for everybody who has strong views on this. I think the story of the Ghent-Anderlecht game really was the story of the two coaches for me. That was the thing that I took away from this game. And Big Ains, as I was saying, is finding it irresistible, not managing to, poke some fun at Anderlecht a little bit. But yeah, both of these sides kind of still where they want to be. But you're right, I think, the big winners this weekend are arguably Antwerp and Union. Speaking of which, Union's game was the final Pro League game of the weekend on Sunday evening. Union top, playing bottom, Glen de Box, Kortrijk. Union managing to win 3-0 in the end, managing to get it over the line with goals in the second half. Union's eighth consecutive league win, which in any league is still very early, of course, but that is very impressive, generally title-winning form. Proving too strong, as I was saying, for Kortrijk. Ecuadorian striker Kevin Rodriguez getting his first two goals. He's got 2 and 6 now and 2 assists. So although he hasn't been playing as regularly as he would like, he is starting to contribute in a meaningful way. Another good signing for them. Cameron Puertas again proving what an important player he's becoming to Union, assisting with 2 of the 3 goals and providing a lot. Generally really good performance from him. Glenn de Bock admitting afterwards, not surprisingly, Joris, that there's no shame in losing to Union, because Union is, as he describes, simply the best club in Belgium at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think there's any argument about that at the moment. They are scoring goals for fun as well. So Rodriguez scoring his first goals, it was his turn. Like Lissin also said, he was getting a bit frustrated that he, for example, after missing that penalty late in the game last week, as all other Union strikers have actually had already scored before, and now he did get his first two goals. Yeah, and indeed, 8 win in a row, and they're, I say, starting to run away a bit. 6 points ahead of the second now. That's the biggest margin that any team has had this season yet. And they really seem on a winning streak. That can only be stopped in Europe, sadly. Last week they had a humbling defeat against LASK in Europe, and it made their group more interesting. Let's put it like that. I guess it will be interesting to see what will happen. They put a lot of pressure on their next two games for sure in Europe, but we're not here to talk too much about that. Definitely. In the league, everything is going well. They're cruising. Can't really add that much. It's going too well, so it's getting boring to talk about it, like, a little bit, which they should take as a compliment, obviously. One remarkable feat is, well, I can tell this at both Union or at Kortrijk. I choose to do it at Kortrijk. They lost all games against Union since Union's return to the Pro League, so that's definitely a fact. So that also means Union have won all games, and they still only have one. I only have a general remark on Kortrijk. I don't think they really, well, they held on quite well in the first half until they conceded twice in the 45th minute and stoppage time, and then the game was basically over. I don't think they expected really to return from that, to come back from that. The more general remark is then they still have only 10 goals scored. Yeah, it's clear where they are having some issues. Yes, they also conceded 3 here, but that's not necessarily something that can happen to the best sides. Only 10 goals scored in 14 games. That's clearly something they need to work on and they need to sort out somehow, because their defense is okay but not good enough to keep up with that low of a goal scoring attack.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. They have to start finding a way to score some goals to give themselves a chance of kind of hanging in there. Because at the moment, the gap between their output and giving themselves a chance to, you know, make some progress is still too big. Speaking of progress, just looking at Kortrijk's schedule kind of in the next few weeks in the run-up to Christmas, they've got some really big, significant games against sides in and about them down at the bottom, which would obviously, if they could get wins there, you know, it's all about Kuds at the moment, really changed the complexion of things for them. They've got Mechelen at home next after the international break. As we were saying earlier, that'll be Beznik Hasi's first game in charge of Malinwa. Then they've got Westerlo at home and Eupen away. So I think those Westerlo and those Eupen games, and arguably even the Mechelen game, are hugely, hugely significant, those next three games. If they could do reasonably well there, then it would really change the kind of potential course of their season for them. But as you were saying, Joris, in order to do that, they're going to need to start scoring some goals, that's for sure. Well, that game was the last game of the weekend, Joris, in the Pro League. We should have a chat about the Challenger Pro League, because quite a lot happened down there this weekend. I'll give you a score roundup first of all, before we talk about the kind of main talking points from there this weekend. Dender won 2-0 against Club Next. SL 16 won 3-1 against Yong Genk. Sarang lost 2-1 at home to Beerschot, who are on quite a fine run of form at the moment. Anderlecht Futures lost 3-1 at home in Brussels to Denza. Oostend won 1-0 at home against Franck Barrin. RFC Liège lost 4-2 to Liers. Beveren and Lommel played out a 2-2 draw, quite a dramatic draw in a game that I saw. And Patro Eisden lost 3-0 at home to Zulte Waregem. So in terms of what's going on with the bigger picture, Joris, obviously Zulte are back top on goal difference from Beerschot. Beerschot have now climbed up to second after winning 4 out of their 5 last games. Really good run of form, as I was saying, got themselves in a really strong position now. Lommel have dropped down to third after dropping 2 points this weekend. They were actually 2-0 up against Beveren until Beveren scored twice in stoppage time, which very few people saw coming, I think. Least of all me. Lommel much the better side in that game. So a bit of a surprise result that, but it does suggest that there is still some fight in Beveren, which is a big positive for Wim de Decker and everyone at the club at the moment. Denza are up to fourth now. They've got themselves in a really decent position, and Denza really provided the big story of the week for us, because the big news yesterday in the CPL, Joris, which came as a surprise to all of us, was that they've decided to part company with T1 Marc Grosjean. As I was saying, much to everybody's surprise, including the players, who reportedly went on strike, didn't really know anything about this and aren't too happy about it. It seems that Yong Genk's former T1 Hans Sommers might be incoming to take over. So we'll see what happens, but nobody seems to kind of know too much about that. I'll let you tell us a bit more in a second. Elsewhere, Oostend are out of the drop zone now, after managing to get their second consecutive win, which was their first win at home. And looking at the league, there's only 5 points separating the top 7 sides at the moment. So as we were saying last week, things are getting really, really concertinaed, if you like, there. But what do you make of the big story over the last kind of 48 hours around Marc Grosjean then?
It is a strange one for sure, definitely, yes. Well, Hans Sommers is indeed the new head coach, that's confirmed. The situation with the coaches and the trainers and the players, really weird, yes. They are doing well in the league. They are well into the promotion, in the promotion race up till now. And yeah, I don't know what I don't really know what's going on. I don't think anyone knows. Really, really, a big surprise. Yeah. Well, I'm sure later on something might come out a bit more about this. About what is going on, but it does really very much feel like a club that doesn't know where it's headed and in chaos. We'll see if they come out of it in a better place or not. That still could be the case.
Yeah, I think it's one that kind of caught us all by surprise. And you can only, yeah, I think you're right, Joris. I think you can only say that perhaps something has happened behind the scenes there that we're not quite aware of yet. So we'll just need to wait and see. I did actually see just a little bit of Denza's game this weekend against Anderlecht Futures as well, and thought they played very well from what I saw of it. And, you know, coaches being dismissed like that, particularly when a side is actually doing reasonably well on the pitch, is kind of quite unusual. So it perhaps might not necessarily be for the footballing reasons that we've been led to believe. There was a slightly interesting statement, which I thought the wording was kind of strange, where they said something along the lines of, you know, we're parting. It's a mutual parting, so that we're in a better place to be a 1A side, which I thought was a slightly strange thing to say, considering that they're actually doing okay at the moment. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks, and particularly how the squad responds to this, because they have been picking up some points recently. So how will this impact that? We'll definitely find out. But yeah, things in the Challenger Pro League starting to become really, really competitive, and nice to see other people around Europe on social media picking up on how competitive that lower division's been in recent weeks. So it's always nice to see it getting the attention, or more attention as we like to give it as well. So I think that's probably just about it for this week, Joris. We should mention just before we go, obviously there'll be no BFP next week because of the international break, but there are some games coming up this week with the Red Devils. Tomorrow evening, as of recording, Wednesday evening, the Red Devils are at home. They are playing a friendly against Serbia in Brussels. And then on Sunday evening, there is the final Euro qualifier at home to Azerbaijan, again at the King Bedouin. Slightly academic, isn't it, Joris? Because obviously the Red Devils have qualified. We know they will be in Germany next summer. I suppose the objective is to get a good result on Sunday and hopefully finish the group and win it.
Good luck to them, and we'll see. Talk to you soon, and probably, if I'm not mistaken, we should be at Trident by then.
Yeah, hopefully by the time we're back next with you after international break, our Ben will be back from his travels, and as Joris was saying, the full Trident will be back for the next round of Pro League fixtures. If you want to get in touch with us before then, please feel free to do that. You know how to get in touch with us individually, or you can get in touch with us directly through the BFP's own X account as well. Drop us a direct message if you want. Likewise, if you've got any listeners' questions for the next episode or upcoming ones, then please do chuck them our way, because we love getting to grips with them. But in the meantime, stay safe, everybody. Look after yourselves, and we'll speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.